Reading FC put away Middlesbrough with a sturdy 1-0 win in front of the Sky cameras on Saturday, ending a week in which reports of an impending points penalty shook the foundations of the Select Car Leasing Stadium. Or did it? That's actually one of the questions we'll be working out in the Titleist Den episode 273. I'm your host, Mark Mayer, and joining me this week, well, we've got a bit of a rule of three going on. We put 3 points on the board, we've maybe losing six, and we've got three of the Titleist Den's best writers on to discuss what's gone on in this weekend's show. And first off, let's welcome Marco Barda back to the show. Marco, you've helped me with plenty of interviews over the last few months and so it's great to have you on for a regular show.
Yeah, hello. It's great to be here and, yeah, looking forward to it.
And we also have another of the Titleist Den writers on, Harry Chafer. Harry, how's it going on, mate?
Yeah, not too bad. Thank you, Mark. Going well, thank you. I think last time I came on here was after a 1-0 loss away at Brentford under Mark Bowen, so it's been a while.
Well, you've got a good aggregate in that case so far. And Ross Webber, man, I believe making his debut on the podcast, another of our writers of Midweek Musings and such. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, doing really well. Thanks. Really excited to be here. Just excited to chat about Reading for a little while.
So you might be able to tell we've got a bit of an international feel for the podcast this week with a German and American couple from the UK as well. So we'll go into the recap in a second and obviously a bit of points deduction talk later on as well. Before we do that, as always, a bit of a nudge to our Twitter newsletter, which you can sign up for, our weekly review done by Steve Curtis, which should be landing in your mailbox every Wednesday or so. You can sign up for that by just going to the Titleist Den's Twitter page. And also the ZCZ Films, our sponsor, and our Patreon subscribers, always very happy to have them on board. Right then, it was a 1-0 win in front of the Sky cameras. Let's talk about it now in the recap.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Well, Middlesbrough came into this game as a bit of a bogey team for Reading. It was a really not a comfortable stat when I read last week that 8 wins and 1 draw in their last 9 games against Reading. So to shake that off our back was really a big boost for Reading. And in the circumstances as well, Harry, the defence that Reading had to put out, shorn of centre-backs, what did you make of the setup that we had with Dejan Tetek, Josh Laurent coming in as well, and Danny Drinkwater and Tom Delibashir in front of them, two players that have basically never played together before? How did you make it as a setup at the back? Who kind of struggled and who kind of impressed yourself?
Well, I was definitely a bit nervous going into the game. I think leading up to the game, it was a question of what Paulo would do. Would he take the risk? Well, any of them would be a risk, really, when you've got all your centre-backs injured, but take the risk with Stickland or go with more experience with someone like Yaya Dom in there. And I think, apart from Tetek starting a little bit shakily at right back, which is pretty understandable considering he's probably never played there in his life, then no one really struggled, really, did they? Which is the remarkable thing. And it's just crazy that our first clean sheet of the season comes in a game where we didn't start centre-back, which is classic Reading, I guess. But yeah, Laurent, Yaya Dom were really, really impressive. And I'll go as far to say as Laurent might even be a genuine option there at centre-back now. I mean, obviously, you don't want square pegs and round holes too often, and Liam Moore and Morrison and Scott Dan coming back in, I'm sure will be the three first choice centre backs. But Laurent has really proved himself there, and against the Neil Warnock team, that, well, all Neil Warnock teams are renowned for playing direct and quickly and up to a big striker up top, is quite a recipe for disaster, really, but one that we managed to avoid with relative ease and comfort, which was outstanding, and a credit to all four of them, all four of the back four. Southwood was, I can't remember him making a difficult save. I might be doing him a bit of disjustice there, but I can't remember him making a save of note. So that's a credit to the four that were in front of him. And we all know, I think we've all seen how good Danny Drinkwater was, just ushering them in just in front of the back four too. They were all fantastic, and I can't speak highly enough of them. And Yeah, he's got a bit of a headache now, Pownall, I think, hasn't he? With Scott Dan maybe coming back into contention. But yeah, they were all great, all really, really good.
Yeah, the impact of Danny Drinkwater, I'll ask you about in a second, Ross, because the defensive change, I suppose, we spoke a lot last week about Josh Lawton and the ability he had to just slot in against Fulham. And I suppose if he could do that, he himself had the confidence to do it. And I guess he is a confident player anyway. He's grown a bit this season, I found, compared to last year. A real box-to-box midfielder, which includes both boxes, so he can certainly do it dropping back. And as you say, the academy player Stickland came on bit later on to kind of just see us through with the balls into the box and everything. And Ross, what did you find, if we talk about the attack now, what do you find with the technical players that Reading have now, can forward some really good chances? It could have easily been more than just 1-0. The Halilovic goal was not a beautiful finish, but a very slick move. And with Drinkwater in there as well, what did you make of the Reading attack going forward?
Yeah, it's just really nice to see, you know, a bunch of midfielders who look like they've gelled nicely. They offer some similar things in that they can all pick a pass. But, you know, they can contribute in different parts of the pitch easily. I feel like Dele Bashiru and Swift really switch back and forth very nicely. You know, if Swift wants to start off an attack, Dele Bashiru gets forward. If Swift wants to be at the end of that attack, Dele Bashiru is back in that sort of holding role. But yeah, it's really fluid football. What I liked about the goal was that it starts with Drinkwater in his own half. And just before he gets the ball, you can just tell he knows what he's going to do with it. I think if Drinkwater is asking for the ball, it's because he's spotted something. He spotted somebody that he can offload it to already. And he's trying to get the ball as quickly as possible so that he can move the defense around. Yeah, really lovely goal. Drinkwater takes out the entire Borough midfield with one pass. I'm not sure if Borough actually had a midfield on Saturday, but he bypassed whatever there was there. And then it's just straight to Hoylett holding it up, you know, kind of doing what we thought Puskás was getting better at, but Hoylett certainly got the skills to do so as well. And once you get it to Swift, you know, in between the lines there, I mean, his passing move is, it's so good. It catches players out all the time. And yeah, I mean, Halilovic, you know, it's not a finish for the ages, but, you know, he's been really good since he joined us. It's good positioning by him to get onto the defender's blind side and come across the goal so that even though it just, you know, hits him on the foot, really, it's still easily going in once it's put the goalie off. So, you know, I think he's had an interesting career trajectory so far, Halilovic, and so maybe he deserves a little bit of luck on that one there.
Yeah, definitely. And kind of pulling it back, I suppose this podcast at least would have been very different had Middlesbrough's goalkeeper buried a last-minute equaliser, which kind of looked worrisome as he flew towards the ball for the last-minute corner and managed to send the ball across the face of goal. But there we go, I suppose. If Middlesbrough are kind of relying on their goalkeeper scoring to get a point off us, then that says more about them than us. But Marco, what did you think of the game management as Reading got into the last sort of 10, 15 minutes? We've had so much late heartbreak lately. Obviously, Middlesbrough went down to 10 men as well. And I mean, as a decision, I don't think many of us will really say much about that. But for that last sort of 5-10 minutes, what do you think was different about the game management that got Reading through for the 3 points this time?
I mean, it's clearly when you receive a goal in the last minutes once, then you're always thinking about it. And whenever you enter the final minutes, then I'm sure many players will remember, okay, we once conceded a goal right on the last second, so that's definitely in their heads. I think overall the game management was quite good. I felt that for most of the time in the final minutes, they were able to keep Borough mainly away from the box. And so, I mean, it's also clear that when the last minutes are beginning, when we enter the last minutes, then, of course, a team like Borough will try everything to get the lucky punch. But overall, I think we dealt with it pretty well. And I think, in general, it was about the attitude. No, I mean, Paolo also didn't have much of choice in terms of tactics, in terms of team selection. So in the end, the attitude was right. And I think because of the attitude, team was able to get a clean sheet, that win, and get the win also over the line.
Absolutely. That's the thing, is the clean sheet as well as the win, isn't it, this week, that can certainly motivate Reading ahead and get that nagging doubt out of their mind as well, as you say, about conceding any more of these late equalisers or late winners. I suppose the stat of the day I found is that Reading have now become the team with more wins over Neil Warnock than any other. We've officially overtaken Watford, so we've now got 18 wins over Neil Warnock, which is a lovely little position to be in, I think. So let's go into the mailbag now and talk about some other things from the game. And just before we do that, we'll be hearing from Velka Panovic, and then we'll be into the mailbag.
I think we're playing all three parts of the field very, very well. I think the improvement also has to come with the ball, talking about in possession. The improvement has to come. When we build up, we sometimes get stuck, and we need to open channels to go forward. So, and sometimes even skipping the midfield. But very good job from the guys today in attack and as a whole, as a team. Superb performance.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
Starting us off this week, and it's a big old mailbag. Usually these, didn't realise a 1-0 win, probably not the most entertaining or action-packed of games, and yet the mailbag is really bulging. So thanks for everyone who's got in touch over the Twitter, the Facebook and thetilehurstend@gmail.com. Badginner starts us off saying 3 points. First, who needs centre-backs anyway? Second, maybe we have a real player in Halilovic. If he keeps up this form, we have a cracking attacking unit. And third, he just says Tetek, which, as we discussed, getting in at right back and pulling off a performance is a massive boost for him and for Reading. Sean Burgess then said, what are our main aims now for the season? Even with a 6-point deduction, surely we have to be looking at giving the playoffs an unlikely run. A bad month, bad run means we'll be probably sinking to mid-table, but we must be too good for relegation. And on that note as well, Rodemar Janajak said, given everything that's happened this year, the crazy injuries, points deduction, etc., what would constitute a successful season? Is it more than staying up, top our finish, or maybe a playoff push is still possible? I'll throw this to all of us, because I think, from my point of view, I the expectations have kind of just gone. And obviously, I think we have to be staying up, even with 6 points. If you'd have said previously we'd have finished 5 points above the relegation zone, that's a bit of a disappointment, isn't it, really? So whether we're in the playoffs or not, I suppose if we're 5 points off the playoffs at the end of the season, maybe we do get a bit angry about it. But for now, I think we just kind of take the season as it comes and just kind of a bit more of a game-by-game approach. And if Reading, we're on 3 straight wins at the moment, if we turn that to 6 or 7, then maybe we do start thinking we can kind of overcome it. But, I mean, I don't... Harry, I'll start with you. But has this changed your expectations for the season?
I think it just took the words out of my mouth, to be honest. It's a game-by-game situation when you get a points deduction. Surely the players know what's going on off the field in terms of the rumours, and they've probably seen that there's a points deduction looming, and they've obviously been much closer to behind the scenes than us, so they'll know what's going on. And even though they know what's going on, more so than us anyway, they managed to put in a performance like Saturday, so I don't think it should derail us that much. If we'd lost 6 points through our performances and 2 bad losses, then I'd be a lot more worried, because that's what affects your morale and your confidence. But I don't think this has any reason to affect the way the team has been playing in the last 3 or 4 games. But who knows? I would love to make a run for the playoffs. Absolutely love it. And I think we've got the players to do that when everyone's fit. But yeah, I'd be being a bit more cautious and just taking things one step at a time, and then seeing where we are, I don't know, Christmas or January. But yeah, 6-point deductions shouldn't derail us too much, I'd hope.
Yeah. And we have so many players coming back around, the holidays and January and all that. So, I mean, take it game by game. You see where we are at the end of the year. And if we're in a around mid-table sort of pressing into the top 10, then I think that with all, you know, Zhao coming back, Meite, Aziz, the Academy, Toms, I think that if we can get all those guys back and they gel with the new signings too, then, I mean, maybe a playoff push is still possible. I don't think you can discount that when you got John Swift in your lineup and you're backing him up with a lot of good replacements if needed in midfield. So yeah, really good position to be in right now.
Marco, what do you say? We've spoken about playoffs, and I suppose 3 weeks ago, even before we thought there was a 6-point deduction coming, we weren't really talking about the playoffs then. So do you think that when I've been reading the media reports, I suppose it's probably from the outside, everyone says plunges us into a relegation scrap. Do you think that there is more of a fear of relegation now? How large is that in your mind?
I mean, as you already said, in terms of quality, I think the quality is good enough to reach the playoffs, but that was the same case last year, for example. No? And you also never know players with long-term injuries like Meite, like Joao, how quick they'll return, how good they return if once they are match fit, if they can perform as good as they've done before. So, I mean, that's always a bit difficult. And I also think that for 1, 2, or 3 matches, it's you can perform well without having center backs. You can perform well with players playing out of position. But for a whole season, that might be difficult. So for now, as we even don't know exactly what kind of point deduction we will receive, I would guess it's pretty early to talk about which way this league will go. I mean, in terms of quality, I'm pretty sure that the team is good enough to even with a point deduction to keep away from the relegation zone for the whole season. If we are good enough, even with a point deduction to reach the playoffs, that's also something that we will see maybe around the Christmas period, because once you get too much cushion, too much distance to the playoff spots, and having a point deduction on your back, maybe in terms of motivation, that might get difficult. But for now, even if that sounds a bit boring, it's all about winning the next match, and the derby match will be difficult enough to get again 3 points.
Yeah, we'll be talking about the point deduction derby a bit later on. And I suppose, I mean, again, we will actually go a bit more into the point deduction scenario, as it were, in Newsbyte. So I'll leave it there for now and go on to Mountain Mike's question saying, do you think there's fear in Pounder when it comes to subs after he's got a number of them wrong? Is that playing on his mind? I'm a bit worried that we always seem to be defending at the closing stages. Will some fresh legs help game management, or are our options from the bench that poor that he can't? Well, you look at the players he didn't bring on Saturday, Ethan Bristow, Jamari Clark, Linford Sackey and Kelvin Abraham-Choman. I don't think any of them really would have helped. And we're bringing on George Puskas, who, you know, is a pretty standard good option to bring up front to run the legs and stuff. And Stickland, the defender, comes on just as a body in the middle, which I think as subs are pretty decent. I think game management, personally, it's kind of beyond the subs. Obviously, the subs are key on it, but I think it's beyond that. And it's about having the players who can put a foot on the ball, win those sort of cynical fouls, just slow the game down and stuff. And perhaps in the Championship, that's the hardest place to do that, because teams like Middlesbrough can create an attack with the players they've got up front and deliver a ball into the box in an instant, perhaps a bit more than certain teams and even the Premier League want to be able to do with their a bit slower, a bit more a lower tempo game. So it is difficult, and we've criticised Pounder a lot on the podcast for this, but hopefully, at least, you know, as we've spoken before, the confidence is getting there for Reading to be able to do this sort of stuff week in, week out. Steve B saying, with Raphael fit again, but Southwood in fantastic form, does Poundrich change a winning team and bring him back? In my opinion, no, we should stick with the same team as long as we can. Keen to hear your thoughts. Harry, I'll throw this one to you. Raphael and Southwood, as we had Raphael back on the bench, where would you go for the derby game?
Well, I think you keep Southwood in. The first clean sheet of the season, I think it'd be very, very harsh to drop Southwood. I think he's got his chance and he's taken it so far. He was really good against Peterborough. he made a couple of really, really good saves against Fulham, especially the one late on from Josh Onuma, which, well, saved us 2 points, or won us 2 points. And then, yeah, he didn't do anything wrong on Saturday either, so I think it'd be really harsh to drop him. I was actually, going into the game, I was thinking that Raphael might start against Middlesbrough, considering who would be playing in defence. There's a lot of talk about Stickland making his debut at centre-back alongside Josh Laurent. So maybe that would have crept into Paulo's mind if he went with those two at centre-back just for a bit of experience. We all know how much Paulo thinks of Raphael's experience, and I'm sure you've heard him refer to him as one of his black belts before as well, on various occasions. So I would have been persuaded to bring him in on Saturday, but he went with Southwood, and he's done the trick again, and he's not let Paunovic down. So I think it would be really, really harsh to bring Raphael back in now. But hey, this is Paunovic, so we've got to be. He keeps us on our toes, let's say, doesn't he? But yeah, I agree with Steve there. I'd keep in Southwood for as long as he keeps putting in performances as he is.
Yeah, I think that's right as well. I think also when it comes to the defence in front of him is another mitigating circumstance. And maybe even if we do have a difficult game against Derby, it's kind of the centre-backs or someone else that takes the fall for that over Southwood. And he might even be able to get through a couple of bad games on that basis. Lloyd Royal saying this is getting silly now. So what's changed in the last three games? Were we worried about nothing? New players obviously making their mark, I think. And Alan Halilovic is superb. So my question is, which three former players do you think Halilovic has traits of? I think he's great. P.S. Even his non-kicking foot is class. Now, Ross, I sent this to you a bit earlier, so hopefully, because I know jumping this off the top of your head might be a bit difficult. So what have you thought about this one?
It's a good question, this. I had a proper think about it. And because Paulo doesn't believe in actual positions on the field, you know, he's playing Halilovic out there on the right. You know, I was kind of trying to blend in a little bit of the winger and the center mid sort of style. So, I mean, right now there's definitely a flash of the Elise about him. You know, he's got that passing range. But moreover, it's sort of the kind of stylish way he saunters around the pitch. You know, he looks like he's a bit too good for this. And then suddenly he just bursts into a sprint and goes around somebody. So I'd say, you know, with recency bias in mind, certainly there's a little bit of a Lise that he reminds me of. Maybe a controversial one here, but maybe Danny Guthrie. He wants to play passing football, which was a complaint of Guthrie's with McDermott at the time. And so, you know, Halilovic comes from, you know, very passing mentality. A lot of the teams that he's played for, you know, they like to pass the ball around. So I think he's like Guthrie, you know, he's capable of passing the ball. He's capable of scoring or assisting. I've also heard, you know, some Croatians mentioning that Halilovic has occasionally had attitude issues. Now we hope those don't come up with his time with the Royals, but that does make him even more similar to Guthrie. So I'd say Guthrie's one there. And then honestly, this one isn't a former player, but just since his first game, Halilovic has just reminded me of Swift, no end. He shows up standing over those free kicks like Swift does. I think that right away you could tell that Alan had worked out that Swift was the real baller in this team, you know, so he was passing back and forth with him quite a lot and trying to get towards Swift. So I think he's not quite at that level. I don't think there are many players in the championship that are at Swift's level right now. But yeah, it's Elise, it's Guthrie, and it's Swift for me that Halilovic reminds me of.
That's a very good reasoning. I like the Guthrie curveball is an interesting one as well. I know what you mean about that. And I suppose maybe if you're a player like John Swift, maybe some players don't like players who are kind of similar to them coming into teams. But if Swift does like players like him, then absolutely he would certainly be loving seeing Halilovic come into the team and playing with him. Luke saying, do we ever need to sign a striker again? False nine for the win. See how that one goes down in the transfer market when Zhao gets back. And Sam Richards saying, Always been a big fan of Anny Winnemotta, but currently struggling to see where he gets into the side. His passing through the lines and ability to take the ball on the half term are not his strong points, something we have been really good at the past 2 or 3 weeks. What are your thoughts on that? I'll throw that to you, Marco. Winnemotta, when he's fit, does he oust Danny Drinkwater? This is kind of on the basis that we'd have maybe Josh Lawrence back on the centre mid as well.
I would say that they would definitely play in the central midfield position in a different way. And Drinkwater is the man who can, like we've seen on Saturday, that you can pass the ball and send the player clear on goal. And wherever Winnemotta is, it's more for me a player who's doing the running. And so it's in some way true, as we also have Josh Lawrence there, that might be difficult for him to get into the team. But on the other hand, I mean, I remember that at the beginning of the season, I was thinking, okay, which position could be one for Tom McIntyre? Which position could be one for Tom Holmes so that they get their minutes? And so with all their injuries, there's so much movement in it, and who knows who will be out in the following weeks. I mean, hopefully there won't be any heavy additions. But so you don't know that. And on the other hand, having in mind how many central defenders we would have if they're all fit, it could be also an option. And having in mind as well that that there are so many midfield players, could be as well an option to play defense with three defenders and then maybe six in midfield and just one lone striker. And then if you change the formation, I think that there will be also space for Winnemotta.
I could see him starting right back as well. I know Tete played well there on Saturday, but I've seen Winnemotta play at right back before. He's got some of those. He's got some of the qualities that can really, you know, that he's doing okay there as a sort of papering over the cracks right back. And I think that Tedek was good. Winnemotta is a little bit further along with his development right now, so I could see Winnemotta slotting in at right back if he is fit for either of the games this week.
Well, also, I mean, the one point we haven't mentioned for Winnemotta is having him off the bench would be a hell of a luxury. We spent last season praying for sort of players to come off the bench and change games. And if we're, you know, let's say magic scenario, April 2-0 up away at someone or 2-1 up away and 10 minutes to go and they're having a bit of a siege, being able to bring on Winnemotta for Drinkwater, for example, is a really good sub at this level. So that's absolutely something that we'll need going down the line if we are to have a good season. And final question then, Peter saying, with the massive pressure on budgets in the Championship, do you think we will see clubs focus on a more flexible but smaller squad with more players that can play in two or even three positions rather than a large number of out-and-out positional specialists? I think we've kind of seen that already in a lot of respects. You look over the Championship over the last 2 years or so, the number of teams, just aside from, you know, the occasional ambitious loss or teams that have been relegated for the Premier League, clubs are being much more picky over who they're signing because of obviously the coronavirus situation, and also just generally teams don't make money in the Championship, so you've got to be really careful with how you spend it. And Reading, I guess we kind of have both at the moment. We have a very flexible squad, but it's also pretty big, but that's largely because of the injuries, I suppose. And I think it's definitely something that Championship clubs have to be as flexible as possible at the moment. And Reading, I hope, are just about learning that now, because we're going to go on into News Bites and talk about a potential penalty that's coming Reading's way as a result of the financial misdemeanours.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
So as it was reported in the week, Reading are facing a 6 or 9 point penalty deduction for financial fair play breaches. These are pretty much believed to be pre-pandemic. The sort of stuff that we heard, Reading having 200% of their income going on wages and stuff like that. Those sort of figures aren't actually going to draw punishment in and of themselves, but it's more the fact that if a team has more than £39 million of losses over three seasons and Reading look to have breached that, it's kind of why Reading are under a transfer embargo at the moment. And this, the fact that they've been under a transfer embargo and the fact that the Reading were allowed to sign players during the summer under kind of EFL stipulations does for me suggest that this has been known about for a long time. Reading are supposedly in negotiations with the Championship as well over what exactly the punishment will be, and that they are allowed to be a part of that process. And hopefully they're able to kind of make their case and show that they're getting better and therefore limit that points deduction. If it was three, for example, with 3 points suspended or another 6 points suspended, I think Reading would almost take that and run. So as one thing that I kind of detected, Harry, after the news of this came out from the Daily Telegraph, is there wasn't as much outrage as perhaps there has been with other things that have gone on with other clubs. And I suppose in respect, is there a sense that Reading fans are well aware that we can't, can we complain? Is there a sense that we can actually complain about this, or are we just facing the reality of taking our medicine?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I think we've known that this has probably been coming for a while. It's no secret that we've done things a bit dodgily maybe, and not really done things the right way, particularly under Ron Gourlay and the sort of Clement era. Things were, well, they weren't great, were they? So I don't think we can complain. With getting punished, we deserve to be punished. We broke quite a few rules, it seems, and spent money that we didn't necessarily have. So, yeah, I don't think we can complain a lot. The only thing that rankles a bit is how the EFL have dealt with it. But I think we all know that the EFL aren't the most competent organisation when it comes to things like this. And I think a lot of fans in the Championship, League One, League Two, know that as well. But the only question I would ask is a transfer embargo for however long we've had one, plus a points deduction, a bit overkill. It's obvious that we've been trying to cut costs and we've been doing everything we can to try and comply with the rules in recent times. Ever since Paunovic came in, really, we've sort of made that switch to doing better with our finances and trying to do things the right way. But maybe it was just a case of too little too late and we'd already done the damage, which is probably understandable and probably probably correct. So not many complaints from my side, but yeah, I just feel that the EFL could have done more to help us rather than inflict even more damage on us. But I guess that's just the way it goes sometimes.
No, it's a fair point to make. And I think also my complaint is really that it does feel like Reading are getting docked maybe say 9 points because we signed Fana Sonny Aluko and George Puskas, yeah, and made bad signings to the tune of like £8 million. Whereas there are clubs that in the Premier League that lose far more money than that, clubs that have got promoted having spent over the FFP limits and just not had to face that much of a punishment because they've promoted obviously and into a different, yeah, league. And also just the general fact that, I mean, I've seen people raise the European Super League question, which people, you know, Man United and Chelsea, et cetera, have paid about like £5 million back to the Premier League for trying to kind of rip up the entire fabric of European football. So it depends which you think is worse, signing Sonny Aluko or trying to make the European Super League. And one of them's got a hell of a lot bigger, more punishment, hasn't it? And Ross, I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? Is that we might be calm about it now, but if Reading finish 5 points or 2 points off the playoffs, will that feeling change?
Yeah, it's not going to feel good. No matter what, if we finish 5 points out, is it even anything from 6 points down? You know, if we finish 6 points out and better goal difference, that's gonna be a painful one. I think though, mostly that's gonna depend on, you know, how many new contracts we can get signed through the season and how much of the team that we can return in, next year, because we've got a lot of good players here right now. But a lot of them are ending, you know, with their contracts are ending at the end of the year. I think it's unfortunately fairly likely that we won't have Swift here after this year. But we've still got a lot of great players outside of Swift. There's a lot of bad teams in the Premier League right now. I don't see any team that could surprisingly come down and sort of cakewalk to the title like Newcastle have done a few times. So I think that it would hurt. But if we can return a lot of players, that'll be a good season. It'll be another season where we keep the same manager, which is not something that we did last decade very well, especially towards the end. And I think that if we fall just outside of the playoffs this year and return players, we'll be in a good spot to maybe even take a run at the automatics the year after. So, yeah, it will be difficult in the short term, but maybe in the long term, it could actually be a season setting us up for some serious success.
Well, that has happened with certain clubs in the past. Transfer bans have hit Chelsea and those sort of teams, and they have used it as a kind of an opportunity to realign with a bit less pressure behind them. And Adam actually, on the website today, on the Tyler Sten blog, has written a piece saying about points deduction would be fair, but if the EFL were going to kind of restrict Reading's ability to renew players like John Swift, if they can do that, then that would be a bit too much. And Marco, I suppose the final point on this is, For the EFL, how do you feel they've kind of handled it? Do you feel that this situation has been kind of handled as perhaps as openly as it can possibly be? Or do you feel like maybe fans are still being left a bit in the dark as to what's going on?
For me, the problem moreover is if I compare, for example, to what I know from, or no, if I heard at least from German Football League, then the difference is that for me, it was always in terms of getting the licensiation for the new season was always something that you could get at the end of the previous season or not. So once you get the okay, yeah, you can start next year in the same division. And that was something like an okay where you knew there wouldn't be any big problems, any big fears of point deduction or whatever. So from that point of view, it's in some way difficult for me to understand the way the EFL is treating it. Because if as you said already, if we want to renew players right now, we are not allowed to at some point. And that's also something that indirectly puts us more in a crisis, because if we are not allowed to renew to players that we would want to keep, then and we lose them without getting paid for them, without getting without that the other club will pay us money for them, then that won't help us at all. So in this case, that's basically due to the regulation. So in that way, it's a bit difficult for me to understand why they are handling it like that, why we are now at the beginning of the season dealing with that problems. And in terms of handling it in a way that everyone understands, I think it's also not quite clear to what point you get a point deduction, to what reasons you get 9, to what reasons you get 6, and also what are the reasons behind not being allowed to renew a player. I think that would be also interesting to understand what are the reasons exactly that don't allow us to renew any one of our players.
Yeah, well, if you want to talk about organisational efficiency, I'm very glad we got the German on this week to talk us through that. To update you on what's been going on around Reading Football Club outside of talks of point deductions, then the women's team this weekend suffered a 1-0 defeat to Spurs. Grace Minoli, the goalkeeper, had a very good game, but sadly a late winner got through to condemn Reading to a third defeat in a row. They have Everton at home on Sunday, so get down to Select Carlisle Stadium for that. The under-23s, a late Mamadi Kamara goal saved a 3-3 draw against Norwich. They're facing Burnley tonight, actually, just about an hour after we finish recording this podcast. And the under-18s, David Inyako, scored twice in a good 5-2 win at Aston Villa. Princewell Obechoma, the brother of Kelvin Obechoma, who you may remember from Saturday's bench, scoring in that game as well. So that's a dynasty that I didn't realise was brewing in the Reading Academy, but we'll certainly take that. And this season, I'll point you towards as well on the Tyler Sten blog. We've got reports from the women's games and as many under-23 games as we can. So do read those if you want to keep on top of those teams. So the Reading men's senior team go to Derby on Wednesday. Let's go into Big Match Preview and talk about that game now.
You're listening to the Tarhurst End podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
So Wednesday night, 29th of September, 7:45 kickoff, and it's available for £10 on the Royals TV Match Pass. So no, I follow this season. The Royals TV, basically the same thing, I think, is the destination for if you want to watch this game for a tenner. And I suppose, as Marco and Ross know aboard, these are pretty decent deals if you can get on them for yep. For watching the games.
Been pretty slick too this year. The Reading FC app and all that. I quite like the way that that's set up. I had some worries, which I wrote about in the summer, because I follow as an international fan was working fairly well. I know there are some issues in the UK, but I'm impressed by the Royals TV experience so far. Very good.
Yeah, me too.
Looking forward to it. Well, so I'm personally, I'm very glad to be away from my followers. at least Royals yeah. TV is a step up from that. Looking at the game then, Harry, we're looking for our first three-game winning streak over Derby since 2011. This is kind of usually a happy hunting ground for us. I'm trying to think of, I mean, the three visits, actually, there's not many grounds I've been to three times and won on all three occasions, unless I've repressed any memories. So, this is a pretty decent place for Reading to go, and Derby certainly a team that Reading can be optimistic about beating.
Yeah, definitely. I think I've been to to Pride Park quite a few times now, and I remember one win in particular at the end of the 2014-15 season when we sort of crushed their playoff dreams, when we had absolutely nothing to play for, which was very nice, and then. Yeah, a few other wins here and there too. So, yeah, it's I always enjoy going to Pride Park and to the Derby ground. I think, like you said, I think it's a game we can win for sure. And I'm confident. I'm really confident going into it. I think we're in a good run of form. We're playing really well. It's going to be interesting to see what Paunovic does with the team, but I'm confident of another strong performance, and with that, hopefully another 3 points, which is what I'm sure they'll be going there for. But yeah, it's just weird going into games confident now when before the international break it was anything but. It's such a change in fortunes from that Huddersfield game, which the less said about that, the better, which was awful. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and it should be a good game. Derby will be up for it, I'm sure. But no, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, actually, Derby, in terms of home games this season, they've won one, drawn three, and they're unbeaten. But they've only scored four out of four games, which is home form goes, you know, there's something kind of missing there if you only get that many goals in that many games. And this is as you say, they'll be up for it. And this is the thing for me, Ross, is that they've actually yet to fall behind in the Championship at home as well this season. And this is their first game since going into administration, and they have had their points deduction inflicted on them now. They are bottom with minus two. And they've actually had a relatively decent start to the season. They'd be kind of lower mid-table, having, you know, last season had to drag themselves out at the end of the season. So I think this will be a difficult game. I think that they will be properly up for this, and their crowd will be having that kind of siege mentality of let's prove that we can stay up even when we've been deducted 12 points.
Yeah, I agree. That urgency is going to be there now for Derby and for their fans. You know, if they do get a further deduction, which there's some rumblings about that could quieten some of that down. But right now, it might not be the best time to play Derby, especially because they'll be frustrated after their late loss at the weekend. I was checking out their attendances. They got over 20,000 in their last two home games. You know, obviously it's a weekday, so they might not get that many, but I can see them getting a good crowd and making a big racket. Now that said, like you said, they don't score very much. And from what I can gather from their fans online, they're quite frustrated. Which, you know, of course they are. That makes complete sense. And I do think that after some of Rooney's comments last week, a little bit of the wind's been taken out of their sails. So, you know, let's see. If they go ahead, it could be tricky. They're pretty stodgy, considering that their center backs are older than Wayne Rooney. But with Jagielka there at 39. It's impressive how well they've done defensively. Only conceded 8 so far this year. But I think it's just going to be a case of, you know, weathering the storm for 15 minutes or so right at the start, and then typical Reading stuff, just hitting them hard, you know, in the final 15 minutes of the first half, in the first 15 minutes of the second half. It seems to be when we score, and I really can't see them scoring more than, I want to say one, but I'll say two to be generous. Bulldog's obviously guaranteed a goal because he's playing us. So there'll be one in there for Bulldog, and just hopefully Reading can get on the board first. But yeah, I think it's going to be a stodgy one against Derby in midweek, especially because with the small squad after all of our injuries, you know, we're managing our fitness a little bit here. So yeah, I can see them fighting hard, Derby, and it should be a tough game.
I think it will be as well. And this is the question that Marco, it's so hard as Reading fans to exactly know who's going to be back from injury when we've got all of these players we're kind of waiting for. And it's only a short break from the last game. So for team changes, would you stick with what we did against Boa? Would you have Tetik at right back and Yeardom centre back again? Would you, if maybe Scott Dan was fit, would you risk him throwing him into an away game off the back of basically having not played football for several months? What sort of team changes, if any, would you make?
I mean, if Scott Dan would be match fit, I would probably start him. Just, I mean, it will definitely help him to get 90 minutes on it. And as you said already before, Derby is not the most dangerous team in terms of attacking and in terms of scoring. So in that way, it might be a good moment to start and play if he is match fit. If not, I wouldn't do any changes at all, especially as you also said, as the Derby defense is not, or shouldn't be, not one of the fastest. So I would maybe prefer Højlund instead of Puskás. And I was really convinced by the performance of Tetek at right back. So I don't see any reasons to do any changes there. So yeah, the one thing would be to bring in Stock Dan if he is match fit as a central defense, and maybe move Laurent up to midfield or change. Switch Yeldum to right back and Tetek in midfield, but I think Tetek at least definitely deserves to start again. And yeah, like you said also before, I wouldn't change in goal as well. So I think Southwood deserves also to start again. And yeah, so no need for changes there.
Yeah, I think if Dan was fit, I think I probably would take Tetek out and shift Yeardob over, because the having a right back at centre back and a centre midfield at right back sort of positioning with another centre midfield at centre back does feel like it can maybe work for a little while, but maybe not forever. So that's probably the change that I would make. But everything else, I mean, we spoke about bringing Puskás in last week and said we probably would, but you know, Horlitz done he's had the faith kept with him, and he's done another good job. So let's round off the show then with some predictions. In the prediction league this week, Ben Thomas got the score. He got 1-0 against Middlesbrough, so he's moved on 6 points now. Ollie, Sim and Adam all got the results, so Ollie's also on six. Westy's well out in front on 12. I'm going to start us off, and I'm going to say a 1-1 draw against Derby. Quite often in the Championship, don't you get these teams that just pick up draws and quite hard to beat, but can't quite get the foot over the line for the win. You look at Millwall, have drawn 9-6 of their opening 9. Barnsley are on 5. Derby are on 4. So I think even Reading, on their paltry total of 1 draw, will probably take a point in this game. And I think Derby will certainly be up for it. So, Harry, what are you saying for a prediction for this one?
I think they're going to go for the win. And I think they'll just nab it. Which is probably blind optimism on my part, but I'll probably go for a 2-1 win for Reading. I think we'll, Ross said earlier, Sam Baldock's going to score. That's I think that's undoubted. So Derby will get one, but I think we'll win 2-1.
Ross, what are you saying for this?
Oh, I was between those two predictions, so now it's tricky. I'm gonna go 2-1 as well. I'm gonna say this is gonna be a 6-point week. So let's see how it goes.
Mark, are you going to continue the optimism?
Well, like Harry said, maybe it's blind optimistic speaking, but I go for a 3-1 win.
Beautiful. Well, when you don't have points on the board to worry about for the prediction lead, you can always go for the win, can't you? That's the problem. I changed my... Actually, having seen the team, I must admit that I did go for a win last week for Bo on the podcast, and I saw the team and I was kind of like, oh, Neil Warnock throwing balls up to Yeardon and Tetek in defence. Oh, we'll probably lose, and I changed it. So there is the, maybe the pessimism also gets the worst of you sometimes. But hopefully this week with Reading got Derby first up, and then obviously on the weekend got another game, which... we'll be back after to talk about. That's the Cardiff away on Saturday. So a tough game there. Two tough road trips for the Royals this week. And if I think 6 or 4 points come out of that, we will all be very, very happy. And it's absolutely been a pleasure to have all three of you on this week. Harry, as always, a pleasure to have you on the podcast and website.
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, it's been great. Great fun talking to you guys about Reading. Yeah, it's been great. Thank you.
And Ross, delighted to have you on for your debut.
Yeah, thanks very much. Hopefully I just kept it simple there, didn't try anything too fancy, and yeah, had a great time. Thanks very much.
Got the basics nailed on, and Marco, as always, a pleasure. Thank you, mate.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. I hope my English level was at least good enough to express the main things good, well and without too many mistakes, and yeah, I fully enjoyed it.
Absolutely miles better than my German. So that's good enough for me. So thank you guys. And thank you very much for listening, everyone. We'll be back, as I say, after the Cardiff game. Hopefully another good week for the Royals. We're managing to string together a few good games now. Let's hope the off-field stuff doesn't come and stunt that. And we'll be talking in a week's time with Reading just about on the precipice of the playoffs. Until then, thank you for listening and come on your arse.
You smile. Funny how the crumbs always leave a trail, even when it's